A car or truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
President Bush has issued a new policy for America's space program that emphasizes military defense instead of scientific exploration. It's the first major revision in space policy for a decade. The Social Security Administration today announced the 2007 cost of living adjustment for the program's 49 million recipients. Average January checks will go up about $33. IBM beat Wall Street expectations by posting a third quarter profit of $2.22 billion. The Big Blue credited robust sales of hard and software commercial computers and web applications. New housing starts rose by nearly 6% in September, the first increase after 3 months of falling numbers. There are still a record number of unsold homes on the market, and building permits declined for the eighth straight month. The government's annual list of fuel-efficient automobiles names the Toyota Prius Hybrid number one with 60 miles per gallon in city driving. The Honda Civic Hybrid is second with 49 miles per gallon. Hamburger chain Wendy's wants to buy back 19% of its common stock, more than 22 million shares. The company's tender offer is part of a three-year plan to return $1 billion to shareholders. Light sweet crude is $58.89 a barrel, and on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is up 46 points, the NASDAQ is down 2, the S&P 500 is up 3. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. How do you solve a problem like North Korea? Well, with all due respect to the Sound of Music and apologies to it, I would suggest that North Korea is a much more difficult problem than a wayward Austrian nun. How do you solve a problem like North Korea? The last three presidents we've had have had three very different ideas. George Herbert Walker Bush had what I would call the ignore the problem and hope it goes away solution. And while he was president, Kim Jong-il, the leader of North Korea, the dictator of North Korea, is believed to have first started developing plutonium. Bill Clinton had the keep your friends close and your enemies closer idea. He negotiated directly with North Korea, signed an agreed framework that provided some aid to the dictator.
Bear with us. We're experiencing some minor technical difficulties. We'll be right back with Mark.
Save a wretch like me. I want
I think I'm back on the air. Studio, confirm that. Excuse me, I hate technical problems, and I'm honestly not sure how much you heard of my intro. So let me make it short if I can. I was talking about how to solve a problem like North Korea. It is a difficult and tractable problem. Well, let me just repeat myself because I don't know how much you got. The question is, how do you solve a problem like North Korea? George Herbert Walker Bush, his idea was to ignore it and it will go away. And during that time, North Korea developed a number of plutonium weapons. Bill Clinton had the idea, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. It was Bill Clinton's idea to directly negotiate with North Korea and to sign an agreement whereby we would give some aid to the evil North Korean dictator, but in return, he would not pursue his nuclear weapons policy, and he even allowed inspectors, even cameras, in there on the nuclear plants, in the nuclear plants, watching over everything to make sure that they did not create plutonium weapons. Then, of course, there's George Herbert Walker Bush, our current president, whose policy one might call speak loudly and carry a small stick. It was George Herbert Walker's Bush idea to deride the Clinton policy of negotiating with the North Korean dictator, to proclaim North Korea part of the axis of evil, and to talk about, well, bringing about the reunification of Korea. At which point, North Korea promptly kicked out the nuclear inspectors and began its nuclear weapons program, and George Bush did nothing, apparently believing that when you kick out inspectors, not worth doing anything. If you bring in the inspectors, as they did in Iraq, then, of course, we need to invade. So speak loudly, carry a small stick, and now, of course, North Korea has a number of nuclear weapons. It has conducted its first nuclear test, it is widely believed, and the problem, which had no easy answer 15 years ago, has even less answers now. But to help provide perspective on this and give us some answers, hopefully, to solving a problem like North Korea, my guest is Korea specialist Bruce Cummings, professor at the University of Chicago and author of North Korea, Another Country. Professor Cummings, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know how much of my initial intro you heard. We had some technical problems, but I was describing the differences in our last three presidents and the way they handled North Korea. Maybe you can give your own perspective on the past before we go to the future.
Well, you're right that it started with George Herbert Walker Bush and continued essentially the same policy through Bill Clinton. In other words, the first George Bush conducted high-level talks with North Korea after the end of the Gulf War, when essentially there was a kind of bipartisan consensus in Washington that North Korea was the next big problem of nuclear proliferation after kicking Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. Both in the New York Times, a relatively liberal newspaper, and elsewhere, there was concern that we ought to do something about keeping North Korea from going nuclear. They had already a plutonium reactor that the Soviets had sold them, but in return for getting that, the Soviets had required them to join the Non-Proliferation Treaty. So the first President Bush sent Arnold Cantor there in January 1991, and that began high-level talk. Now, Bill Clinton came into office, of course, in early 1993 and was focused on gays in the military, health care, things like that, and didn't concentrate on North Korea. In fact, his aides couldn't get him to pay any attention to it. In 1993 March, and then going on for about 15 months, a big crisis developed as North Korea dumped its second load of fuel into cooling ponds. It's important to understand that they dumped fuel in 1989 for the very first time, and they didn't dump as much. But they dumped enough so that if they were to have reprocessed all the plutonium that they got out in 1989, they might have one or two bombs, according to the CIA. The CIA made that estimate in 1992 and continued that estimate for a decade until 2002, that they had one or two bombs, possibly. But when they dumped 8,000 fuel rods in May 1993, this provided the wherewithal for 6 to 8 plutonium bombs. And it detonated they dumped the rods in May 1994. Before that, the Clinton administration had been pressuring them. North Korea said it was going to withdraw from the Non-Proliferation Treaty, said sanctions in the U.N. would be an act of war, the kind of things that they've done very recently. In the end, after more than a year of tension, they dumped these fuel rods into the cooling pond. That got Clinton's attention, and his policy was to launch a preemptive strike to destroy the plutonium rods and the plutonium reactor. And he nearly did that in June 1994, but Jimmy Carter intervened, talked directly to Kim Il-sung, and got Kim to agree to a freeze on their huge plutonium complex. That freeze was codified in the October Framework Agreement of 1994, and it lasted 8 years. And just one more thing.
Mr. Cummings,
yes.
This is interesting stuff. We do have to take a break, and I want to get back
sure.
to this history and also encourage anyone who wants to call in to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back with more of the problem of North Korea right after this.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
What's Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is Head On with Bob Kincaid.
The only hope that George Bush had after he raped the Treasury, after he ripped us off, the only hope he had for balancing out the amount of the bad paper that he had to go and hang in China was to take control of the means by which China would receive oil. Iraq is one of the faucets. The other faucet is Iran. If he can control those two things, he can continue to hang bad paper on China, and on the other end, act as the dealer outside the schoolyard to China's little junkie. Does this make sense?
It makes perfect sense, but I haven't heard it said in that concise a manner. Nobody has made the loop so small that everybody can realize.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, only at headonradionetwork.com and radiopower.org.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other, and it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. How do you solve a problem like North Korea? To help answer that question, we have Professor Bruce Cummings at the University of Chicago and author of North Korea, Another Country. Now, Professor Cummings, you were giving us some history here. Let me see if I can sum up to date. Under George H.W. Bush, there were one or two bombs. And then you were saying that under Bill Clinton, he actually was considering a strike against North Korea. But Jimmy Carter talked Clinton out of it or talked Kim Jong-il out of it? I wasn't clear on that.
Jimmy Carter flew to Pyongyang and talked to Kim Jong-il's father, Kim Il-sung, who proceeded to die a couple of weeks later. But with a CNN crew there, he got Kim Il-sung to agree to a freeze on the nuclear reactor and to put these 8,000 plutonium fuel rods into concrete casks. And I just wanted to emphasize for your listeners that I don't know anyone who, any expert who denies that the facility, the plutonium reactors, and the fuel rods with 6 to 8 bombs worth of plutonium were under UN control and UN inspection for the next 8 years. So Clinton.
So to be clear, during the Clinton administration, I assume Jimmy Carter came, if you will, with a carrot and a stick. I mean, the carrot was obviously some aid, but the stick was that Bill Clinton was ready to conduct a strike on North Korea if they didn't obey. Is that fair?
That's exactly right, although Clinton, it was a very dangerous thing because if he had launched the war, it would have just been absolutely devastating. And our military commander, Gary Luck, came back to the White House to point out to Clinton that it would take 6 months to defeat North Korea. He'd need 500,000 American troops, not counting South Koreans, in the theater, and he'd need 100,000 body bags. So we're talking about the potential for a huge war. And luckily, Carter, who got wind of this, intervened. And the U.S. did give aid to North Korea, but let's look at what happened. The North Koreans gave up their plutonium reactor, which was useful for making plutonium but also for generating electricity. And they did it for 8 years, and we were supposed to build them light water reactors, which would be under essentially under international control, and we were supposed to normalize relations with them. Clinton only began doing those things in the late 1990s, just before he left, really. He was pushing through what probably would have ended up in not only a normalization and our embassy in Pyongyang, but getting Pyongyang to get rid of its medium and long-range missiles. So
okay, let's confirm just what you've said. Sort of take it all and put it in one nutshell here. Under Bill Clinton, it may have been an awful bluff, but whatever bluff, he threatened force, and Jimmy Carter used diplomacy. And actually, under Bill Clinton, is this not just your belief, but the understanding of all Korea specialists, that all of North Korea's nuclear materials during the Clinton regime were under lock and key, under United Nations international supervision?
That's absolutely right.
Is that the general understanding of virtually everyone in your field?
Yes. I mean, it's not a question of, did it happen or not, or is it my belief or not. It is a matter of the plutonium facility being locked down under seal with television cameras on it and two U.N. inspectors there 24 hours a day. One of them was an American, Jim Walthall, who wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times about this last week. So there isn't any question about that. The bomb the North Koreans blew off last week was a plutonium bomb, and that plutonium was under lock and key all during, really from 1994 to 2002.
Well, I just think it's important before we even get to the current president that this history, I'm really glad to give my listeners the inside scoop from you on this, but I have to say, I'm fairly knowledgeable person, but I haven't read in the New York Times or the Washington Post. And at the same time, we see people on the right blaming Bill Clinton for the current situation. Obviously, they couldn't be more wrong. But why don't we see what you've told on the front pages of our newspapers?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I wrote an op-ed in the New York Times last July after the North Korean missile test with my wife, where we pointed out that Bill Clinton almost had a buyout, an indirect buyout on North Korea's medium and long-range missiles. And if he had completed that, they wouldn't have any delivery capability for whatever bombs they might have. And that, was right on the front page of the New York Times in October 2000. The top North Korean general came to the White House to meet with Clinton. Madeleine Albright went to Pyongyang a week later. And this is the deal that the Republican right derides as basketball diplomacy. I mean, she gave a Michael Jordan-signed basketball to Kim Jong-il. The fact is the Bush administration dropped this missile deal. Failed to follow.
Drop the ball, literally, here.
Yeah, I mean, read Madeleine Albright's memoirs, because she just was amazed that they didn't follow through on this.
Okay, so what we could have done in October 2000 is literally purchase the capability, much as I've argued on this program in other contexts. We need to buy up loose nukes in the former Soviet Union. We basically buy up the bad stuff. Sure, we give money to a pretty nasty dictator. That's the negative side. But the positive side is we end the danger not just of nuclear war, but of him using nuclear power to get blackmail us into getting even more things from us.
Well, that's right. And there's one other element in it. North Korea was selling these missiles to Iran and Pakistan and Yemen and making a lot of money on them. So you're not going to get them to give up their medium and long-range missiles just for a kiss on the cheek or something. This is a big multi-million dollar moneymaker for them. And what we did was not give money to Pyongyang, but say to them, we'll provide about $1 billion a year in food aid for an undetermined number of years if you give up your missiles. So it was an excellent buyout, and it's just really a tragedy that Bush dropped the ball on this.
Okay, let's fast forward. So we have October 2000. Clinton offers to, all the plutonium is under lock and key. Clinton offers through Madeleine Albright to buy up some missiles. November 2000, the majority of Americans vote for Al Gore. December 2000, the majority of Supreme Court chooses Bush to be our president, and he comes into office in January 2001. How does our Korea policy change in January 2001?
Well, Colin Powell, as Secretary of State, said in March, just before the South Korean leader Kim Dae-jung came to visit Bush, that he wanted to pick up where Clinton had left off and get that missile deal done. The very next day...
This is March 2001.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get the date straight.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
And the next day, Clinton met with Kim Dae-jung, who had won the Nobel Peace Prize a few months earlier, and told him he didn't trust Kim Jong-il, and it's clear that Cheney and Rumsfeld nixed the deal that Colin Powell wanted to do. And ever since, you've had a kind of war within the Bush administration about whether to try to overthrow the North Korean government through some sort of regime change or whether to engage it. And they've never...
So Colin Powell wanted to engage it, and Cheney and Rumsfeld didn't. And that was the war that was going on?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, Dick Cheney, of the three countries that Bush put into the axis of evil, the one that Cheney really loathes is North Korea. And Bush, of course, told Bob Woodward in Woodward's first book on the Bush administration that he loathed Kim Jong-il and he wanted to topple his regime, called him a...
Now,
big...
when was that speech, Axis of Evil? I remember it, but
evil
I don't remember
the
date. It was in 2001?
The first State of the Union address in 2002, a year
2002.
After he was inaugurated.
Okay, so let's between March 01, when Colin Powell starts to really continue the Madeleine Albright plan, and 02, the Axis of Evil speech, what's going on there? This internal battle, is that what's going on? And
well,
Cheney
there
wins,
was
I guess?
A continuing internal battle, but essentially nothing was going on in that. It's very important, given the Republican charges against Clinton, that Clinton and his aides had detected that North Korea was importing enriched uranium technology from Pakistan in 1998, and they followed this, and they told Bush and his people all about it, and they said it's something to watch, but it's a very difficult process to make a weapon out of, and it shouldn't stand in the way of negotiating and engaging with Pyongyang. Bush sat on that for 18 months, and then in the weeks just after he announced his preemptive doctrine, which was September of 02, he sent a message man named James Kelly, a State Department functionary, to Pyongyang to accuse them of having a second nuclear program. And essentially...
Was there any evidence of that?
Well, there is evidence that they imported enriched uranium technology. There is no evidence that I'm aware of that they have centrifuges up and running the way Iran does. It's a very difficult technology, and my understanding is that they wanted the enriched uranium technology to enrich uranium as fuel for the light water reactors that we were going to give them, sell them, which is this, you know, essentially a low technology kind of thing, but taking enriched uranium all the way to weapons grade uranium is much, much harder. And furthermore, they didn't need to do it since they already had plutonium. And Bush used this.
Back up a little, because I'm a little confused, and I know if I am, my listeners are. And it's probably because, hey, I'm not a nuclear scientist. Enriched uranium is where you start, and then you work on it and build it up and use centrifuges, I guess, and that creates plutonium. Is that fair, or am I missing
no.
a step?
It creates enriched uranium, essentially by whirring uranium around at extraordinarily high speed. You split off atoms so that U-238 gathers on the sides of the centrifuges, and that is enriched uranium, which can be used in a nuclear weapon.
What's plutonium?
Sure.
What's connection there?
Well, we had two bombs at the end of World War II. One was a uranium bomb with highly enriched uranium. The other was a plutonium bomb. And North Korea blew off a plutonium bomb last week. Its reactor made plutonium out of the uranium fuel that was put into it, but it's not highly enriched uranium. It's called plutonium.
Okay, so I guess I'm not a nuclear scientist. I guess what you're telling me, again, if I'm wrong, please correct me, is that there are two types of atomic bombs. There's
exactly.
the uranium atomic bomb and the plutonium atomic bomb. Am I getting it right now?
That's right, and the plutonium bomb is easier than the highly enriched uranium bomb. And as I said, you know, North Korea has had a plutonium program for a long time, but which has been inspected, and people know exactly what it is. Nobody knows exactly what they're doing with highly enriched uranium, but the point is the Clinton people didn't feel that you should break off relations with North Korea just because of this second program. Instead, you should nail down what you could nail down, which was the missiles, and keep nailed down what you had nailed down, which was their plutonium reactor. And by sending Kelly to Pyongyang to confront Kim Jong-il in the aftermath of the preemptive doctrine, Bush essentially failed twice. He failed to do anything about the highly enriched uranium program. The North Koreans said, screw you, and said, we're going to open up our plutonium reactor again, get control of the fuel rod, and kick the inspectors out, which is what they did.
So in other words, you agree with what I said at the outset. It was speak loudly and carry a small stick.
Yeah, speak loudly, carry a small stick, trip over it, fall, and...
Because I remember, I'll tell you, I was working in Congress in 2002. I remember very clearly when Kim Jong-il kicked out the inspectors, because we were being told, hey, now that they're gone, you know, all they have to do is grab the plutonium. It's a matter of days until they can weaponize these things. You know, we have... 20 days, 30 days, maybe 60 days in which to act, and we were all surprised to really hear nothing coming from the Bush administration. What do you think, having made the mistakes it did, when North Korea did kick out the inspectors, what were our options then, before we even get to our options today? Were they greater then than today?
Well, let's remember what was going on in the fall of 2002. Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld were preparing a war against Iraq. They
right.
held back the information that Kelly had failed in Pyongyang. They held it back from Congress for several days until they got their enabling legislation for Iraq through. Then they announced what had gone on with North Korea. And
so it was almost too late. We were already doing one war. We couldn't do two.
Exactly. And I think if the Iraq war had gone quickly to success, North Korea would have been second on their list, but of course we're bogged down in Iraq and can't spare, you know, a combat brigade for Korea. In fact, we took 9,000 soldiers in a combat brigade out of Korea to fight in Iraq.
Right. which I think gives the wrong message. It seemed to me that, in fact, it sounded like a real retreat. We were afraid they might get hurt, and so we moved them, was sort of how I recall it happening. So now take us from 02 to today. What has been going on in the last 4 years? Give us the good, the bad, and the mostly ugly.
Well, the Chinese were trying assiduously to get some diplomacy going and to get Bush and Kim Jong-il talking. And so 3 years ago, they first set up three-way talks in Beijing between allegedly the Chinese and North Koreans and us, but it was really designed to get us to talk to the North Koreans, and that went nowhere. So,
well, Bush was refusing to talk to North Korea, right? He wanted only if Japan and South Korea and China were there, right?
Well, he was willing to talk in the following sense, which is exactly the same as our current Iran policy. If North Korea gives up its nuclear program, then the U.S. might give them something in return. But
sure, if they give up the nuclear program and unify Korea and then give flowers to everyone, yeah, then we might talk with them.
it's
the cart before the horse.
Of asking someone to give up everything up front while you...
Before you even talk, yeah.
Yeah, pledge nothing. So it hasn't worked, and it isn't going to work. But China then organized six-party talks, which went on for a couple of years until last September, when it looked like an agreement had been reached to denuclearize things, the Korean Peninsula. And, that was a result of good diplomacy by Christopher Hill, who was a State Department man. But he does not have the backing of the hardliners in the regime. And those hardliners instantly slapped on sanctions on a North Korean bank in Macau, which is apparently related personally to Kim Jong-il. So it was an insult to Kim Jong-il. And the North Koreans then said, well, we're not following through on the agreement we made, and to hell with you.
Okay, now back up, because I want to get the details of this down. This is 05, Christopher Hill. By the way, six-party talks, North Korea, United States, South Korea, Japan, and China. That's five. What have I missed?
Russia.
What's the sixth? I'm sorry?
Russia.
Russia. Oh, I didn't realize. Okay, Russia. That makes sense. They do have a tiny border with North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now Christopher Hill, on behalf of the United States, agrees with all the parties. What precisely was the agreement in 05?
Well, it wasn't an agreement like Clinton made. It was a statement of principle that North Korea was willing to give up its nuclear program or programs, and the U.S. was willing to aid North Korea. And under certain circumstances to move forward with normalization. But there are many, many things in the way of that normalization. But what has happened all during the Bush administration is whenever there appears to be a chance of negotiations with North Korea or even a breakthrough like the September agreement, hardliners will do something to sabotage that agreement. Bolton has done this time and time again, directly insulting Kim Jong-il, for example, which... You're
talking, of course, about American hardliners, not Korean hardliners.
Yes,
you're talking about the Cheneys and the Rumsfelds of the world wanting to sabotage our own United States agreement.
Well, they want to sabotage diplomacy and the State Department, and this happens all the time. I mean, it's like a pratfall routine, but the president doesn't assert himself to stop it so that we get a consistent policy. And the result
In essence, it sounds like what Hill did in 05 is largely, maybe not as good as, but largely recreating what Clinton managed to do for his 8 years.
It's similar. It definitely was similar. It was a step-by-step movement toward normalization in return for North Korea denuclearizing. And it was a back-to-the-future agreement in that sense.
Okay, now take us up to the current day.
Well, we've had... 14 months of no six-party talks, and North Korea trying to get our attention first with missile tests in July, and then with this atomic test in last week. Now, the missile tests are irresponsible, they're unfortunate, but they were fundamentally a way to get our attention, and there wasn't anything new there. In other words, they launched a long-range missile that failed and some medium-range missiles that succeeded, but we knew that stuff was in their arsenal. The atomic test, to me, makes me think North Korea has turned a corner and they're not really interested in negotiating with the United States, at least not with the Bush administration.
Yikes. To me, I mean, it's like you've got a 2-year-old throwing a tantrum, only that 2-year-old's got a gun.
Well, the North Koreans are very good at throwing tantrums, but in this case, you know, they have demonstrated that they have an atomic bomb for the first time. You never know if you have one until you test one, and the test they carried out was small. There are rumors today that they may be preparing to test another bomb, but what I think is extremely unfortunate is that 15 years of attempts under the non-proliferation regime to get a freeze and keep a freeze going on North Korea's nuclear program has it looks like it's ended, at least for now. No American president is going to deal with the North, at least not for a number of years, unless they
give up. Not until we get a new president in 09.
Yeah, I mean, but still the North Koreans are going to have to give up their arsenal. And it seems to me harder to get them to give up their atomic arsenal than it was to freeze their nuclear reactor. But having said that, the fact is for 8 years they froze this very expensive project and had no wherewithal to make any nuclear bombs. So they did give it up once for a long time in return for a better relationship with the U.S. So you have to believe that they'd be willing to do it again.
We have to take a break, but before we go, tell me, was the test successful? I mean, do they have an atomic weapon, at least that they know how to work? Do we know? Did the test work?
Well, the papers are reporting that, according to our intelligence agencies and the instruments, you know, that picked up the radiation, yes, they did blow off an atomic bomb, a plutonium bomb, not a highly enriched uranium bomb, but that it was less than 1 kiloton. Our bomb on Hiroshima was 12 kilotons, so it's a small bomb, and some experts think that maybe part of it didn't go off. They had a fizzle, but certainly, you know, around half a kiloton is 500,000 pounds of TNT. That is a lot. It's a lot of explosives.
Any nuclear weapon is a very powerful weapon.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. Folks, if you want to call in and ask this expert, I got to tell you, Professor Cummings, I'm amazed at your expertise, and I've learned a lot today. Folks, if you have a question, all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, or 877-4-HEAD-ON, and ask your question. If not, when we come back, I want to ask Professor Cummings, what, if anything, we can do now after 15 years or certainly 6 years of utter failure to deal with North Korea? We'll be right back after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop with my terrific guest, Korea specialist Bruce Cummings, professor at the University of Chicago and the author of North Korea, Another Country. You've heard the spin, folks. You've seen the Fox propaganda channel. It's all Clinton's fault, the right wing says, for our problems in Korea. Bruce Cummings makes clear that it's exactly the contrary of the truth. In fact, under Bill Clinton, all his plutonium weapons were under lock and key. We had inspectors. We were watching what he was doing. And it is George W. Bush's policy of speaking loudly and carrying a small stick that has got us into the mess we have today. I happen to think that maybe we need another outburst from Bill Clinton, much like he did with Chris Wallace when Wallace challenged him about what he did before 9/11. I think we're going to need another outburst about our Korea policy. Yeah, but let me ask you, Professor Cummings, apart from your book, which is definitely a terrific book, where, say, on the web could someone find some details that you're talking about the next time their friend or neighbor says to them, didn't Bill Clinton cause this mess?
Well, Madeleine Albright's memoirs talk about her trip to Pyongyang, her negotiations with Kim Jong-il in 2000, and her being flabbergasted that the Bush administration let this missile buyout drop. But, you know, you could say she's partisan because she's a Democrat. But Michael Gordon, who was one of the best reporters on the New York Times, did an investigative report that went on and on about this missile deal in March of 2001. I think it was March 6th. And I read that report and then happened to have lunch that week with William Perry. I was out at Stanford for the year. William Perry is a former defense secretary under the Clinton administration who came back in the late 1990s to try and lead a revamp of our Korea policy. And he was the one that was really negotiating this missile deal. And he told me that everything in Michael Gordon's article was true and that Republican complaints about verification of the agreement were essentially, you know, false. So I think the Michael Gordon report, which you can get on the New York Times archive, is a very good one. Selig Harris.
And, of course, your book, I mean, a little bit of plug is always fair on a radio show. Your book, I assume, goes into this in some detail.
Yeah, it does. Selig Harrison, who is was on the Lair NewsHour last night or the night before and is really very good. He wrote a book called Korean Endgame for Princeton University Press that I think is the single best book on our negotiations with North Korea. I mean, my book is about North Korea as a state as well as our negotiations with it. His is really about the negotiations. And he's a former investigative reporter for the Washington Post. He doesn't have any access to Grind. Neither does Michael Gordon. So, I mean, I don't blame your listeners for not being able to figure this stuff out. I see misinformation all the time, especially on Fox, but also often on CNN.
Well, hopefully you can get an op-ed by you in some of the major newspapers, at least telling people that this is out there. I mean, I knew the outlines of the agreement, but I guess I wasn't clear on how well Clinton had done. I did kind of know how bad George W. Bush had done. So now we have the present time. One of the things that most, I guess, irks me about conservatives, and I do have them on my show. I debate with them all the time. Is that whenever you ask them about why we got into Iraq, their question is, okay, you know, it's too late to go over spilled milk. The question is, what do we do now? And it always irks me because the guy that, you know, digs the hole is now complaining, how are you going to get us out of this mess? But understanding the question is unfair, I'm going to ask it anyway. What could, let's say, a Democratic Congress, since we're not going to have a president for 2 years, but I think we're going to have a Democratic House of Representatives come January, possibly a Democratic Senate. What could Congress do, if anything, to help America out of this awful mess?
Well, I think there are Democrats like Bill Richardson and Bill Clinton and Madeleine Albright who have a lot of experience with North Korea who can go there and talk to the North Koreans. Bill Richardson has done that. People in Congress, if there is a majority in the House, can hold hearings and investigations and get some of the facts that we've been talking about out into the public sphere. But I don't know that there's a lot that Congress can do if Bush continues to be unwilling to talk to North Korea directly. And frankly,
it's really up to the president, isn't it? I mean, this is a call. I mean, Congress can try to bring some light on this question. But at the end of the day, unless we get a new president or a president that changes his mind, we're in trouble here for the next 2 years.
That's true. Although what is going on now, both with Iraq and North Korea, is that former Secretary of State James Baker is heading up a commission that apparently is going to suggest major changes in our policies in Iraq. But Baker is also saying that when you have adversaries, you need to talk directly to them. And this is... been unwilling to do.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Condoleezza Rice is going around the world. There is a Security Council resolution. She's not only promising to defend Japan, which I would hope we would do, but leading a worldwide push for sanctions against North Korea. Are sanctions likely to calm North Korea down or anger an already angered country?
Oh, they're already very angry about the sanctions.
They've declared war, I think, is how angry they are.
Well, they have said this before, back in 1993, that U.N. sanctions would be seen as an act of war. When you actually parse this, the fact is if somebody blockades their port or seizes their ships on the high seas, this is an act of war under the laws of war, under international law. They're not declaring war. They're not going to start a war, but they certainly are declaring their deep unhappiness. But my own sense is that the sanctions are not going to bite very much unless China chomps down on North Korea, and it's not going to do that. China will hurt North Korea, but it won't bite hard because it doesn't want North Korea to collapse.
Well, I've been unclear about China's role because they seem to be on both sides of this fence, and I'm not quite clear whose side they're on. Maybe you can help me figure that out.
China is on all sides of this question. In other words, they have excellent relations with South Korea and support South Korea's engagement policy with the North. They also have good relations with North Korea. I mean, over the long term, North Korea has been probably their best ally and vice versa. On the other hand, they don't want nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula. They're afraid that North Korean nukes will make Japan go nuclear and maybe even Taiwan. And that's just a nightmare from China's standpoint. So China actually sent envoys to tell the North Koreans don't test a bomb, and the North Koreans went ahead and tested it anyway. So that was a real slap in the face to China. But China is also saying they don't want harsh sanctions. They don't want interdiction of ships. They're inspecting cargo going into North Korea and out, but they're not going to cut off their oil or food for any length of time. They may cut it off for a couple days here and there, to punish North Korea, but if they cut off food and oil, it isn't really, in my view, that North Korea would collapse. It's much more likely that you'd have a border war between China and North Korea. North Korea has a huge army. China had a war like that with Vietnam, and they had skirmishes along their border with North Korea back in the 60s. So they know who they're dealing with, unlike Bush, and they know you can only push the North Koreans so far.
One of the things that I know concerns U.S. policymakers is what we talked about earlier in the hour with Clinton's plan to attack them militarily that Carter apparently averted. But the fear, of course, is that they're going to send this very large army south into South Korea. We've got Marines there. Seoul is maybe a half hour from the border. I've been to Seoul. It's very, very close to the border. One of the things that I've thrown out on this show, and you can feel free to tell me, Mark, you're dead wrong, and I'm not the expert you are, but the idea that perhaps South Korea might need nuclear weapons as a deterrent effect, and that if we could sneak them into South Korea, then we could make a deal with power talking to power and say, all right, you get rid of yours, South Korea will get rid of theirs, and even up the score. What do you think of that idea?
Well, the United States was the first country to introduce nuclear weapons to Korea. We put Honest John nuclear-tipped missiles in there in 1958, and we kept those and a variety of other nuclear weapons in the South until 1991, always under American control. And we always did not want South Korea to get a bomb. And, in fact, they tried to in the 70s and were very close to having a nuclear weapon. And Henry Kissinger, during the Ford administration, just told the South Koreans, look, if you go ahead with this, we're pulling our troops out and we're pulling everything out. And so he shut it down. But that background, of course, is very important for North Korea. I think today it's highly unlikely that the U.S. would reinstall American nuclear weapons in the South. And
even under American control?
Even under American control. And the reason, of course, is that a Trident submarine, which has sometimes been called Armageddon in one ship, can glide up to the North Korean coast and destroy the entire country in a matter of about 10 minutes, and the North Koreans are well aware of this. But isn't the fear
that if North Korea conducts a conventional attack on South Korea, due to whatever reason, you know, we've angered them or whatever, that we might not pull that nuclear trigger, and that this was the argument that Ronald Reagan made with the Pershing missiles back in Europe in 1982, that you need to have them actually on the ground just so they form that tripwire effect. What do you think?
Well, now you're getting to the heart of the matter, at least from a military standpoint. American war plans in Korea have always called for the early use of tactical nuclear weapons if the North is invading and succeeding. In other words, very early in an invasion, if they can't be held back, we would hit them with nuclear weapons. And this stuff has been declassified over the years. Experts know.
And that's been the policy for Republicans and Democrats over
right.
a long period
in
of time.
A bipartisan policy. But what the North Korean nuclear bomb last week does is it makes it much more difficult to move toward tactical nuclear weapons. And as a result, I'm sure there are people in our military in South Korea who are worried about whether they can actually handle a full-scale North Korean invasion. I don't think any invasion is coming, but of course military commanders have to prepare for everything. I would say that
okay.
the other thing that...
I was going to say, in the last 2 minutes we have left, and say what you want to say, but also I'd like to know what you think at the end of the day North Korea actually wants. Go ahead.
What North Korea wants is a normalized relationship with the United States. And they want American aid. They want the U.S. to play an honest broker on the peninsula. And fundamentally, they want to survive. They've survived 15 years since the Berlin Wall fell. They want to keep on surviving. And I think, frankly, that if the U.S. were willing to give a security guarantee that we're not engaged in regime change and won't overthrow the government, won't attack them, and make this, you know, ironclad in some sense, that North Korea would still give up their nuclear program.
So at the end of the day, a contained dictator, much like, say, Saddam Hussein prior to 2002, is better than an all-out war that we may have some difficulty winning.
So even if we won it, it would be at the cost.
Too much cost.
Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of lives, and the Korean Peninsula would be destroyed again as it was in the Korean War. So it's essentially not an option. There aren't really any military options. And so your choice today is to contain and deter North Korea, as you just said, which I think is what Bush has decided to do, or to engage it and see if you can go back to the future and walk the cat back to those agreements that Clinton succeeded in making.
Last question, and we're literally running out of time. Is it possible that North Korea, like the Soviet Union, might just implode?
Well, that's what so-called experts in Washington have been saying for 15 years, and I've been saying that if that happened, I would go into another walk of life because
You don't think it's going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen. North Korea is, among other things, an anti-Japanese state, and Japanese nationalists are getting stronger and stronger. That brings North and South Korea together with China.
Professor Cummings, we're out of time. I very much enjoyed this interview, and I hope you'll come back on the Inside
Great.
Scoop.
Thanks a lot. I enjoyed it, too.
Thank you very much for coming on the Scoop. Tomorrow we're going to go into voting rights. Will your vote be counted in November 2006? Tune in tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. For now, it's Mark Levine signing off.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Couldn't wait to get here today. One of those days coming on over to the studio, I was thinking, yeah, I'm anxious, I'm ready to go. You know, it's one of those times you don't know what to do with the show, though. I mean, there's so many subjects to approach that you don't know which way to go. But we'll probably head off in several different directions today. Maybe not like we did yesterday. I mean, have you ever heard a show? And those of you that happen to be on the chat room or any place else today, have you ever heard a radio show that had a lot to do with Republican oral sex and turkey nuts? Yes, I'm sure some of you that didn't hear yesterday's show are going, what? Well, I don't know if we'll be along those lines today, but we'll try and have a good show for you. Welcome. Glad to have all of you with us, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. And it is a gorgeous day here today, about 83, 84 degrees and sunny. And my wife got back from Ohio today and said, it was cold up there. It's up in northeastern Ohio. So so much for the weather report. We're glad to have you along today. We have much to talk about. As you well know by now, the 10 of our people we lost yesterday in Iraq, nine soldiers and one Marine. And, you know, 10 more, and it hardly makes the news. Have you noticed that? What's it take? What's it take? This is the most important issue in several decades, in my opinion. And yet, so what? That's the attitude the media is giving it. And then we have this miserable excuse of a human being named George W. Bush calling for us to push on. Push on. Just keep throwing our kids into the meat grinder. With no positive outcome in sight, with almost everyone in the know about the place saying it's absolutely hopeless and this fool wants to push on. Oh, I don't know. Makes me wonder what kind of a man would throw away American and Iraqi lives every single day so that he can just strut around saying, I'm a war president. Doesn't he enjoy that? I'm the war president. We're talking about a psychopath of the highest order here. We're talking about a man who, in the party of, family values and morality and all that, a man that has no moral compass whatsoever. A man that I don't think he knows right from wrong. I don't think he does. If you could stand it, did you watch this signing yesterday of him signing the torture bill? Did you watch that? I have a question for everybody. He had everybody in there that really fought for this bill and all the big shots in the Republican Party and all that. Where was John McCain in that picture? Where was John McCain in that picture? John McCain, after all the protestations that he had about it early on, end up kowtowing to the Bush administration and sucking up to him, getting down on his knees like he always does, and servicing the party, and went along with him on the torture bill like a good little boy. Where was he in that picture yesterday? If you were planning on running for the presidency, would